The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thanks, Pete, for that. I am going to be with you the next whole hour until Charlie Kirk replaces me at about 9:30. Speaking of issues that are at the legislature that should, by the way, I think help any Republican message, if that's the direction that the state wants to go, is there's a bill out there that is going to seek to mandate for, a jillion government employees at every level of government in the state that there be collective bargaining, to take away local control, which I don't know if you were paying attention last year, but you remember when the legislature passed their bill that allowed Boulder to go hardcore, much harder core on guns than the state, they did it under the argument that, well, local control, local control, local control. Now they've changed their mind. And what they've decided is there can be no local control when it comes to government employees and the relationship between your elected representatives at the city, state, county, whatever level. They now have to be forced into a position where you would have to accept collective bargaining if that's the direction they want to go. And that's because local control only matters when you're trying to infringe on someone's Second Amendment rights. Otherwise, it's irrelevant. You don't need local control. We're going to have on City Councilman Dustin Zvonik, newly elected, already tearing it up out there, he and the new majority, the things that they have put in place. We'll talk a little bit about that. But this is a big deal, and this is going to affect cities, Aurora being the third largest city in the state of Colorado, and perhaps for the moment right now in the best position to expand into the future, just in terms of available land, relationship with their partners to the west and to the south. There's a great deal of opportunity. Their location near the airport, a lot of opportunity for expansion. The last thing in the world that they would want to have to deal with are unionized government workers. And we're going to talk about that with Dustin Zvonik at about 9:30. But listen, this issue, I'm telling you, even for me, the texts keep blowing up here. And it's folks saying, don't believe Pete, or don't do this, or you should blah, 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 blah. Getting Trump out of the election is the same situation when someone ran against an incumbent 18th DA due to her issues. That's insider baseball. But yes, the Never Trump Show never ends. Here's another one. Pete, I love you. Turning into another nut burger. You are no less ideologically possessed than anyone on the left. Congratulations. Why? That's for Pete. That's not me. Why won't the Republicans drop the issue? That's another great question. And so, listen, I'm not Pete. I've got my own views on this. I'm not defending anyone to not nail a cross or not nail them to a cross right now. But what I would say is this. I am interested in having a conversation with one of the people who made the decision to vote for this thing, hell, even the person who drafted it, and ask them, what was the motivation behind it? And maybe the motivation is just as obvious as it seems. Our motivation is to call into question the election of 2020. If that's what you're trying to do, then I agree with Pete. We are going to lose. If that is the first and biggest thing we're going to talk about in the legislature, and we're going to carry that message through to November, it is over here in Colorado. I don't know about other states. We are not going to win if our message is 2020 was stolen. On the Tina Peters thing, and for reasons that are probably unique to me, given my former position as the district attorney, I am no fan of publicizing the use of a grand jury where it's not already part of the discussion, right? Where it's not. So, for instance, I don't slight AG Phil Weiser for talking about going to the grand jury. I slight him for going to the grand jury. Like, that was a weak, gutless move because he got no new information. He couldn't have made the decision on himself. However, that piece being out there, it had already been investigated. There's no way you're going to protect the identity of the people under investigation, and that's the purpose of the secrecy of the grand jury. Here, I don't want us talking about the grand jury investigation until it's complete. And the DA who's out there, and I think it's still Dan, I don't know if he begged off of this and got someone else to come in, but Dan Rubenstein is a great DA. I'm friends with Dan. I like Dan. He is wicked smart. He is committed to justice. And so impaneling a grand jury isn't the same thing as saying, I think you're guilty and I've convicted you already. But it wouldn't shock me if what comes out of this is an indictment. And I know Dan and I trust Dan. And Dan's a Republican too, by the way. And if Dan were to come out and say, I'm moving forward with this case and I think I have a reasonable likelihood of success and a good faith basis to believe she committed this crime, I will back Dan. I think Dan is the right one on this. But I'm happy to tell you, the phone lines are starting to fill up. Give us a call, 303-696-1971. Until that time, you're listening to George Brockler. This station right here, 710 KNUS. I don't know if this is the Rocky Mountain way, but it's apparently the Colorado way this morning. George Brockler here on 710 KNUS, as Pete just told me in the hallway, keep riding the bull. Sounds like the bull wants to be ridden because the phone lines are full at 303-696-1971. You keep them coming in, I'll keep answering. Frank from Denver, you're on the George Brockler Show. What do you think, sir?
You're the perfect guy to follow PB.
Tell me what you think about this.
Well, I think that opinions vary, as they say, but just the facts, ma'am, from Jack Friday. And,
right.
You know, I think that it's a long time till the election, and people have a lot of reasons, very complicated, about whether they cross the picket lines or whether they vote and who they vote for. But I think that appearing for the defense would for the prosecution would be the witness, PB, and you're the guy sitting there, maybe the judge, saying, let's keep going, let's listen, let's see how it plays out. The visual I want to leave you with, and Trump is obviously far from perfect, and he's got these character flaws that some people zero in on. I don't choose to necessarily hang a person for a few character flaws. Circumstances happen. But remember the movie Patton?
Oh, yeah. Well, great movie.
There was a scene in there where Patton is standing on the field where the Athenians met the Carthaginians.
Oh, yeah.
And he was talking either to himself or someone, I don't remember, but he said, wouldn't it be great in the future if instead of us fighting wars and killing all these young men, dying, if each side just pulled out a champion and the two champions met on the field. So the visual I want to leave you with on the world stage with Putin and the guy in China and all these other world leaders versus a guy like Trump, who do you want representing yourself? And I think he brings so much to the table, all traits, characteristics, and decision-making ability considered, that we have to look at the alternatives. I'm not saying he's right for the next election, but I'm not saying he's wrong either. I think you obviously have to look at the competition. And sometimes by default, because the competition, Democrats, are so bad, and the outlines that they have for our country are so bad. So all things considered, and hopefully the Republicans, if not Trump, can come up with a great leader. But we have to see what comes as it moves through the summer and into the fall.
That sounds incredibly reasonable and rational, Frank, as always. Let me ask you, when you hear the discussion about this, and where I differ from Pete is this. I do think there's something here because it doesn't get reported on if it's absolutely nothing. But I just want to know more before I'm willing to go hardcore. This was such a crazy thing to do.
I agree.
It's over.
The Republican Party is put into a different position at different times. They're trying to maintain their base as best they can going forward. And
is that what you think that they're doing, though, Frank? I was going to ask. Do you feel like this is an homage to the base, to the folks that are big Trumpers?
Well,
like, hey, we're still here. We haven't lost.
I think it's also a comment that if you're waiting for all the evidence to come in on January the 6th, how bad was it? Was it, as the Dems point out, you know, an insurrection? No, I don't think so. Was it bad? Yes, there were people there that did bad things, and they have been prosecuted. But I think that the Repubs are trying to ride this bull and see if they can make the 8-second ride. And right now they're at 4 seconds, and you know they're using all their tactics. Hopefully become a more skilled bull rider as time goes on.
Now, you've been watching this long enough in Colorado. Does this message get us into the end zone in November, or is this the kind of message that will distract enough that we lose some of this great momentum that we get, not from anything good we've done, by the way, but just from the Dems having turned this place into a bit of a dumpster fire?
I think there's so many blue forces and so much dark money and so many stories spun out there about the, quote, badness of Trump. And Colorado, I'm afraid, for a number of years, is probably not someone you can count on in the Republican corner. But the bigger picture is the swing states and the country as a whole. And obviously conditions change and vary from week to week, month to month, day to day in the world. I mean, what's Putin going to do? You know, we may be facing a totally different thing in a week or so with him acting crazy over there. But part of that plays into a weak administration that he figures he can get away with whatever he can. Do you think he'd be doing this with Trump? No.
So, no.
There's so many factors, George.
Yeah, there are a ton here. And Frank, as always, you are a great voice of reason, and you got us kicked off. So thank you. Thanks for constantly listening. Thanks for sharing your opinion with us. By the way, line is open, Frank's line. But we're and by the way, Aaron, Joe, you guys stay on. We're going to get to you. But we have a VIP caller, and I want to get him on. Friend, super smart guy, not in the metro area, which tells you maybe he's a little saner than most. But on the phone with us right now, Representative Matt Soper. Matt, how are you feeling today?
Well, still a little rough, but recovering.
Is it COVID, buddy? Is that what it was?
It is COVID, yeah. It seemed to hit me a little harder.
Now,
I had just a remark to
some
friends that I hadn't been sick for 3 years, and all of a sudden it hit me.
Yeah, you jinxed it. This is just like the NFL guys that are like, you know, he hasn't thrown an interception in 200 pass plays, and then it's a pick. You know, I mean, that you were on the cover of Madden for health right there, and you just got jinxed. Now,
totally.
Matt, we've been talking about these amendments that got voted on for a bill that the Dems ran that was a nothing bill, right? Like they want the Dems, and I guess Senator Priola from the Republicans, wanted to encourage D.C. to take away our local control of elections by supporting that ghastly H.R. 1. And then the Republicans offered some other amendments on this. Now, can you talk us through what happened and how this thing played out and what, at least to the extent that you can, what your understanding of what went on was?
Yeah, absolutely. So I participated remotely yesterday, and that's something we're still allowing because of the pandemic. I can tell you from my perspective, I could listen to the debate. I couldn't participate in the debate, and I could vote. So I did go ahead and vote for the amendments. I actually thought they were falling on party lines, and I could only tell what the content was based on what the flow of the debate was about. And so for me, that was a real disadvantage because this morning I've been able to track down the actual language of the amendments. And quite frankly, if I had the opportunity to do a do-over, I would be a no vote on both amendments. I don't think we ought to be telling DAs how to do their job. That was what was in one of the amendments. It was telling Dan Rubenstein not to prosecute. And
was that the language of one of the amendments, Representative Soper? Was that it was saying we encourage, you know, Dan Rubenstein to give up on the grand jury or something like that?
That's correct, yes. That was a clause way down in the amendment. That's not the job of the legislature.
Nope.
I mean, that's basic civics right there.
Right, right. I agree with you. What else was in there that you saw that in retrospect you're like, whoa, wait, what?
Yeah, so in thanking Ron Hanks and the millions of Americans who exercised their First Amendment rights on January 6th, in reading that, I was like, wow. You know, I don't think we ought to be thanking anyone for what happened at the Capitol on January 6th. Yeah, I do know that there was a lot of people who were sheep who just went along with the flow. But quite frankly, you know, no one should say that what actually happened in the Capitol was a good thing.
And was that your sense of the amendment that they were? My sense is the goal was to try to take some of the sting out of January the 6th by saying, look, we want to thank all the jillions of other law abiding people who came there to just voice their opinion. You go ahead.
I think that was the intent. But when you actually go back and read the amendment, it does make you go, it sounds more like it's actually condoning the behavior rather than.
I'm going to have to see this amendment.
That's the opposite.
So when you listen to the debate as best you could from your COVID secure location there, what were the things that the folks were talking about in support of this? I mean, that got you to the point where you're like, yeah, this seems reasonable. I think I'll go along with it. And then you read the words and it's different. What was the debate like?
So the debate was focusing more on the fact that we still haven't gotten to a point where we've had a forensic audit of the 2020 election. We still have a lot of people who are questioning the outcomes. We still have a lot of people who even are questioning what happened on January 6th. And quite frankly, I could agree with all that. I mean, I think there's a lot of question marks throughout all this. I mean, I don't think that the chapter is fully shut on anything. I just think that
Matt, if you don't mind, let me back up. Let's just tell folks who are listening, where are you on the legitimacy of the 2020 election and Joe Biden's presidency and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, at this point in time, I mean, we have to accept that that Joe Biden was elected, that he is president. I mean, I was elected in 2020. I certainly
looked for evidence of fraud, man, there it is. If you got elected, no, I'm kidding. Yeah, I'm kidding.
And I mean, I think we can always do things better. And I think that Mesa County and Douglas County in the end, with what they did during the school board elections, was something I would like to see every county do just for our own assurances. I mean, in 2016, the Democrats weren't happy. In 2020, the Republicans weren't happy. Let's use both of our vote counting mechanisms, Clear Ballot and Dominion, to count the ballots, and boom, you have a natural audit.
And you correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like what you're saying is, look, I think the 2020 election came out the way it was going to come out. I think Joe Biden is the legitimate president. But I do think that we still need to continue to try to tackle voter fraud. And I've said this on the radio before, Matt, a bunch of times. I think there's fraud in every single election. I just don't see it, at least for Colorado and the nation at this point, rising to the level of changing the outcome. Where are you with that?
Oh, I would agree. Yeah, I mean, we know that there's always going to be something that's happening that's fishy, that doesn't meet the letter of the law. But for it to be such widespread as to overthrow the election in Colorado, I mean, we certainly would have seen it in lower ballot races. We would have seen the trend change. I mean, I've been analyzing elections for over 24 years in Colorado.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that I can look at a district in western Colorado and pretty much tell you what the percentage is going to be unless the candidate were to go out and shoot someone.
Yeah. Right. Also, when you got elected, so did somebody named Lauren Boebert got elected, too. I mean, going to be widespread fraud, certainly they would have gone after folks like you and her and some others.
Absolutely.
So when you are dealing with this in the aftermath now, and just procedurally, this is procedurally, you cast this vote. It sounded like it was somewhat sight unseen on the amendments, just based on the arguments and the fact that it seemed like it was a party line vote. You were supportive of it. Can you do anything now to go back and say, whoa, 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 I've taken a look at this. This is not what I thought.
Unfortunately, I don't believe so. I think at this point in time, you just kind of have to, deal with the decision you made on the fly. And, you know, like I tell folks from time to time, if politics were always exact, we could have a machine there, not real people. But, I mean, we make mistakes as elected officials, and I wish I could go back and change those. We can't. We can always do better next time. Luckily, this was not an amendment that was going to pass. I would have felt even worse had that been the case.
Yeah. Are there other amendments like this and I just don't go down to the legislature more than for the meaty criminal justice stuff, but are there amendments like this offered up all the time, or is it usually in the beginning part of the session where it's just sort of the one party's out of power and or even the party in power and their attempt to just try to send a message?
It happens throughout the legislature to send a partisan message. Usually it's trying to message back to your base that, you're good on one side or the other, depending on if you're from the left or the right. As it stands right now in the Republican caucus, there's a little bit of a divide. I should say quite the divide. And so this was probably more aimed at dividing the Republican caucus than helping the Republicans fight the Democrats. And that's the real sad nature of our state.
Go into detail about what you mean by that.
Sure. So if you look at the amendment, the Democrats were always going to vote no. So who then did the amendment cause to have heartburn? That would be the Republicans. Because the way it was worded, there's going to be at least half the Republicans who are going to panic and the other half who are going to lock down and say, yeah, absolutely, that's how I'm going to vote. Well, an amendment like that serves only to divide the caucus. And as Abraham Lincoln said, you know, house divided cannot stand. And right now, the Republicans, we have a shot at taking back the House, the Senate, the governor's seat, but we can't do so if we continue to be divided.
And those amendments are the ones that were offered by the Republicans that divided us? Or do you think it was the Democrats that their particular, I don't know if it was an amendment, but a bill or whatever they offered?
So the Democrats offered the resolution, and obviously that was an attempt to try to divide us. And they did a good job because then the amendments that were ran by Republicans to divide Republicans.
Yeah. Yep. 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 So now what? I mean, let me ask you, as someone who's going to be on the ballot again coming up in 2022, in what should be a great red wave year, not just in Colorado, but across the country, what do these kinds of efforts and messages do to that effort? I mean, you're in a newly drawn district. How would you describe it? Is it more competitive than the one you were in before?
No. No, I would say it's about the same.
Okay. How does this impact, then, you and you think other Republicans running? Like you said, Senate, Governor, AG, those are big races.
I think for the big statewide races, it impacts us because it tells someone in suburbia, Colorado, hey, you know, the Republicans who want to take back power, maybe they're not completely sane. And that's the subtle message that's being sent back here. And that's what's troubling to me, because I believe that if we're on the cusp of taking back power, we need to show the people of Colorado that we're ready to govern. And we need to send a message that, hey, we're not going to waste time with trivial resolutions like the Democrats were running to talk about supporting federal legislation that no one has read, that has not even had a single committee hearing, that quite frankly can go through about four or five or a gazillion different changes before we even know the outcome, and to basically sign a blank check to support what Congress is doing, I think is very dangerous. Our job in the Colorado legislature is to focus on Colorado, and that should have been the message yesterday, but instead we went down the rabbit hole. I believe we can pull ourselves back out. We have to.
Matt, do you feel like this position here, you coming on the air and talking about, look, I voted for this thing. Here's how I got there. I regret it. Here's why I regret it. I read these things and all this other stuff. Do you feel like that comes with the risk of a cost to you politically, either within the leadership, from the leadership of the House or in the broader party? And I've got less than a minute with you, but man, this is a big question.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it comes with a political risk, but I think it's a risk worth taking because I think the people of Colorado who are listening to this radio interview do need to hear that Republican lawmakers are thoughtful. We consider the issues and that, you know, we're ready to govern. We're ready to move forward.
Representative Matt Soper from way out there west. What's your number? What's your district number?
House District 54, Delta and Mesa Counties.
Well, listen, get well soon. I'll probably see you at the Capitol, man. But thanks for coming on. I appreciate this.
Hey, thank you, George.
Hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to be joined by City Councilman Dustin Zvonik from Aurora City Council. But I got to say, my hat's off to Representative Soper from coming on. I think it takes courage and guts to come on and say, here's how I did what I did. I made a mistake and I'd change it if I could. What do you think about that? I promise you, Aaron and Joe will get back to you after Dustin. George Brockler, 710 KNUS. Man, love that Chris Cornell voice. That is Black Hole. And are we headed there? As you know, legislature is underway. We've been talking about a little bit of the insanity that's going on there today. But one of the things that we're tracking pretty closely is legislation that seeks to upend and change local control on a very important issue that could have wide-ranging impacts from Colorado's third largest city, maybe the one with the greatest potential for the future. And certainly under the hands of the new majority there, it feels like this could really happen. We've got on the line with us right now Aurora City Councilman Dustin Zvonik. Sir, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, this thing, and I know you're working on some kind of a guest editorial or column for one of the big papers out there, but issue that the legislature is trying to impose upon the city, talk to folks about what it is, and then let's talk about how this could impact you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that, you know, we're 19 days into the new year, and evidence of this November's election is everywhere. I mean, everything from our maybe the most anti-law enforcement attorney general all of a sudden being pro-police to our governor. Governor Polis talking about the need to cut taxes and fees. And those are issues that are being, you know, all are being talked about in the newspapers and on radio shows like yours. But the issue that I'm become increasingly concerned about is what you're talking about here. And that is a plan that would force collective bargaining on all local governments across the state of Colorado. This could add potentially up to 250,000 local government employees to union roles. And this is one of the things that, you know, could slide under the radar during this legislative session that I think needs to be brought to your listeners' attention. And the reason why I talk about it in terms of evidence of an election coming is you might recall, I think it was last July-ish, right. The Denver Post, there was an editorial or an article about the AFL-CIO, one of the largest labor unions in the country, saying that they were going to withhold contributions to the Democratic Party because their party leadership wasn't doing enough of their bidding. So fast forward to the dawn of an election season.
How many months later? How many months after that revelation?
So this goes, you go from July of this past year until the proponents of it started to bring forward probably late November, early December, heading into the session. And as I said, this is not insignificant. One, I think it's a blatant violation of our Constitution's protection for home rule cities like the city I represent in Aurora. But it's going to have massive impact on rural school districts, on local districts, on cities across the city. When you're talking about holding or adding 250,000 government employees to union roles, it seems like a little quid pro quo heading into an election year.
Now, when they propose this thing, and sometimes you see this where the Dems, especially when they control everything, they'll come out with the AAA biggest, baddest, worstest bill, knowing that it's going to be bad business and they can't get it really done. And then they'll scale it back to something that's awful. Like, for instance, someone would come to you with, I'm going to use the term crap, forgive me, a full plate of crap. And they'd say, you're going to eat this.
Yeah.
And then they'd carve it back to half a plate. And, you know, we'd be like, oh, my God, it's only half a plate. That's so great. Is there a fallback position for them in this? Or are they legitimately saying, we're going to get this done? And do you think that Polis would sign it?
I hope he wouldn't. And I don't know that there's a fallback because I think for them, for Democrats right now, heading into an election year where they feel the headwind, it's the reason – you know, that even the Denver Post today is talking about taxpayers should get their Tabor refunds. I mean, they recognize that the issues that voters are concerned about, the increase in crime, the cost of living, they recognize that they're going to be held accountable for it, and they need their allies in the trenches. And they have no greater ally than organized labor. And I think if they don't do anything but go in for the full plate of crap, as you called it, if they go for anything less, I don't think that's enough to assuage the likes of the AFL-CIOs. And they're going to want to see, you know, this bill pass. So my hope is that calmer heads prevail, and that would include hopefully Governor Polis and maybe other legislative leaders on the left side of the aisle. They recognize that this is going to receive significant pushback from local governments across the state. This is going to receive significant legal pushback. As I said, it's likely a constitutional violation of our home rule protections for cities. So I will. It'll be interesting to see what the Democrats do in terms of trying to water it down. But I don't see that happening. I think they're going to go all in.
So it feels like they painted themselves into a corner here. Like this was an homage to the unions that they felt like they were losing, and they can't just offer it and run away from it. It sounds like they can't offer it and water it down. So I mean, we're headed for some kind of a collision course here, and either the governor, who maybe this is the one silver lining to this guy setting up an environment where a self-funder can dominate an election cycle and doesn't need anybody else, but he doesn't need the unions, right? Like, they got nowhere to go. They're not going to turn on him.
Right.
There ain't going to be anybody that defeats him in a primary. Maybe this is also a boon, ultimately, to a Governor Polis who has seen his numbers dwindle over time. He can see the red wave. And maybe this is a way of saying, yeah, the Dems do everything they can to get the bill on his desk, and he vetoes it. And that way he can claim he's a moderate and then run for president.
Yeah, that seems pretty par for the course. And I think it's important to point out, I know that in the past couple of weeks, we've heard a lot about the striking employees at King Soopers. And, you know, there's a big difference when you talk about public sector employees versus private sector unions. And that is this. If you and I decide we want to continue to go to King Soopers, which, by the way, I have, we can do that. And if you choose not to, you don't have to. There's dozens of other alternatives in the private sector for people to go and do their grocery shopping. But when you talk about unionizing public sector employees, what you're essentially allowing for is these public sector unions to hold taxpayers and these critical services that, frankly, local governments have a monopoly on. There isn't a backup emergency 911 system you can call. If you start allowing local government employees to unionize, to use collective bargaining, to force their hand, they're holding taxpayers and critical services that are monopolized by local governments hostage. And it's a huge difference, and it's something that will be bad for taxpayers and bad for local governments. And I sure hope that your listeners out there, you know, as the legislature continues to run forward with this, they'll reach out to their legislature, make noise about it, because I'm telling you, this is one of those issues that could very easily slide under the radar, given all the other things that will be kind of on the front page of the papers. And this hasn't risen to that level, but it should.
I think you have brought up a great comparison in this way. Like, all the talk that you hear about right now involving the picketers with Kroger and all that is, you know, the CEO makes 8 trillion times what your checkout person makes. Well, in the case of the government, it's not them bidding against some fat cat CEO. It's them bidding against us. It's them holding us and our pocketbooks hostage for more pay and more benefits. I presume then, if this thing passes and becomes law, and I know it'll be contested in court, the cost of government will go down considerably.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what had happened. Or the exact opposite. I mean, look, this isn't a new idea. There were attempts to unionize greater sectors or greater percentages of the government. But in 2013, then Governor Hickenlooper signed a bill that allowed for local governments to do collective bargaining, but it required a vote of the people. And by and large, since that time, voters have rejected attempts to add collective bargaining to their local governments. I think what you're seeing is the unions are tired of getting beat at the ballot box. They know that legislative Democrats are worried about reelection. They know they're heading into a tough election year. And so they're just going to try to bypass the voters and require these legislative Democrats to do their bidding and pass this, which is, you know, to your point, it's not going to shrink the size and scope of government or make it less expensive. It's going to do the exact opposite.
Now, we are not a data-driven legislature these years. We are an anecdote-driven legislature. Who are the people that are going to come forward and testify to the horror stories of working for a municipality and how it's like slave wages and no benefits, and this is the only way we can get back on equal footing with taxpayers? Where do those stories come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. I just don't know where they come from. I mean, you know, so many of our government employees have great, you know, great pay, great benefit packages, and they do provide, you know, critical services to their communities. And I don't think that they're the ones out there clamoring to add collective bargaining as something that they can participate in. This is being completely driven by the unions, some of these special interests and their allies in the legislature.
Now, have you heard at all from like the FOPs, the APAs, the other organizations that came out and supported your candidacy and other candidates' candidacies? Have you heard from them about this? Are they taking a pass on it? Are they fully supportive of it? Where are they on this?
I haven't heard from them, but you got to remember, a lot of local fire departments and police, the ones you gave, or the examples you gave, police departments and fire departments, they already have collective. So in Aurora, both we have a bargaining unit for both our fire department and our police department. What we don't have is a collective bargaining unit for, let's say, the, you know, snowplow removers, or our parks and recs department, or our finance department. So none of the employees outside of those two departments, fire and police, have the ability to do collective bargaining. And that's not too dissimilar from other cities. Now, some don't have any. So I can't see, and I haven't heard from either of the bargaining units in the city of Aurora to say whether or not they would support this legislation, but it wouldn't impact them. What this would essentially do is mandate it on the rest of the city.
Wow.
And mandate it on all of these other local governments. And the ones, you know, you think about some of these rural school districts that don't have collective bargaining.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. What are they going to do?
These are the ones, they're going to be forced to, you know, if this goes through, they would be forced to create a collective bargaining structure in, you know, in their system. And it could be, again, it's just going to drive up costs. Yep. And potentially hold taxpayers hostage.
Aurora City Councilman Dustin Zvonnick, keep up the great work out there. We're going to have you back to keep updating us on Aurora and this bill if you'll do it.
Yeah, appreciate it. Happy to do it.
Thanks, sir. Take care. Hey, listen, when we come back, we are going to get to those calls. Aaron, Joe, everyone else at 303-696-1971. You're listening to George Brockler on 710 KNUS. Giving it away here on 710 KNUS, George Brockler back with you till the top of the hour. Charlie Kirk, after that, we go live and local with a guy named Stephen Tubbs from 3 to 7. Pete, not back in tomorrow. He is on his way up the mountain to do a little skiing. And so I think it's going to be young Jimmy. And I don't know how long he'll continue to tolerate young Jimmy. I would take young George, but if you look at my hair color, that's gone the way of the dodo. Nonetheless, I promise to get to the phone lines, and I'll get to your call if we can, too, at 303-696-1971. My great thanks to Councilman Dustin Zvonnick from the great city of Aurora talking to us about really what we should be focusing on is what the Dems under the Gold Dome are doing to try to continue to wreck the state of Colorado. Let's get to Aaron from Denver. You're on 710 KNUS. Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, morning there, George.
Hey, sir.
The councilman from Aurora, he's absolutely right. I mean, it just would bring more chaos, more nonsense to the state of Colorado. Lord knows we got tons of nonsense and piles of donkey ass already in the state of Colorado. But the thing is, the thing about what my man Peter Boyce was talking about, and I love this to my man Peter. But the thing is, if you believe that Donald Trump is going to rise up from the dead like Jesus Christ after being crucified, and he's going to be back into the White House, that's your right to believe that. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No.
No.
But if you believe that, that's fine. If you believe in the so-called cultism of Donald Trump, that's your right. If you believe pigs can fly, that's your right. I can go on and on. That's your right to believe that. This last time I checked, this is America. You believe what you want, as long as you don't try to push that belief, try to get me to drink your Kool-Aid.
Well, so let's talk about that part of it, Aaron.
What about what's going on under the Gold Dome? When you ran for secretary, why do you think you did not win that race? Why do you think you didn't win that race, George?
I want to blame it on voter fraud, but the truth is 2018 was a blue wave like we've never, ever seen in the state of Colorado. And that's just the way it is, man. Colorado went a different direction. I think they'll rue that day if they haven't already. But, you know, we've seen what happens. But let me ask you, Aaron, because I appreciate your position here. Then hearing what has gone on with the legislature, at least the House side of things on the Republicans, what do you make of what's going on under the Gold Dome? Why are they doing that? You said believe whatever you want to believe, but just don't force me to drink it. What are they doing with these amendments? What's the goal? Who are they talking to? And does this make it more or less likely that we're going to pull off victories in November?
Well, I think, like I said, if I was running and I have that R branded on my forehead, it doesn't matter. I have that's the scarlet letter. I'm a Republican. You know, whether I happen to be black, green, whatever color, and I have that R branded on my forehead, either they're going to vote, either they're going to vote for what I have cooking in my kitchen, or they're not. No matter, you damn if you do, if you damn you don't. Whether if you think the election was stolen from Trump, if you didn't think of it, it doesn't matter, because you got that R, you got that scarlet letter branded on your forehead. So it doesn't matter. You know,
well,
I mean,
so Aaron, forgive me. Do you think it's a neutral? Aaron, hang on.
Don't even know what the hell's going on in their state. They know what's going on with the different locals.
Aaron.
More than they know what's going on under that dome, and what's going on under that dome
like
in Denver is way more
Aaron,
important
speaker,
than what's going on with the Denver Broncos,
that
George.
Can't. Aaron, let me ask you, and thank you for that. You think it's a neutral then? And here's why I ask that. This isn't just like your neighbors going out there and saying, I'd like to sponsor a petition that says that, you know, the election was stolen, or I support Tina Peters, or the DA shouldn't investigate, or whatever. These are the elected representatives and, frankly, the leadership of those elected representatives under the Gold Dome. Isn't it more than a neutral? Is it a negative, or is it a positive what they did yesterday?
Well, you have the other guys that he said he voted for it, and he said it was a mistake.
He did. That was Matt Soper.
So I had to go with him. It was a mistake for voting for these gentleman said from Aurora, it would hold taxpayers hostage. And last time I checked, if you work for the government, you work for the taxpayers of the state. And if Amen. You cannot handle that gig, that job, then my advice, find something else to do with your time. That's it.
There are a lot of these municipal jobs and state jobs in particular. I can't speak to too many municipal ones that have really decent benefits packages, including para. I would love to be able to retire with a para pension.
There's a pension.
Yeah.
Last time I checked, my job, and I currently work in the private sector, I have a 401k. Now, I don't see the government, if you, as a government employee, last time I checked, here in Denver, here in Colorado, it's, you have a pension plan. Now, I don't know what's going on in the state of California mm-hmm. or New York
right.
you know, in these other states. I don't know if they have a 401k plan.
I'm pretty sure it's all pensions in those big cities. And as you know, Aaron, and by the way, love the enthusiasm. Love that you listen and call in. I'm going to try to get one more caller in at least at 303-696-1971. Aaron's line is open now if you want to jump on in. There is a big difference between the way you sleep at night when you know you have a guaranteed pension, or at least you're told you have a guaranteed pension, and the 401k, because the 401k, you kind of rise and fall with the economy in a lot of different ways, and that's a much different proposition. A pension makes you feel warm and cuddly at night, like I'm always going to get this as long as I wake up in the morning. 401k, things take a turn down to the south with the stock market, and all of a sudden you lose a lot of your, your quality of life, your standard of living over the succeeding years unless it rebounds. That's a difference right there. But I don't want to necessarily debate all the benefits of being a government employee, but I do want to get to Joe from Arvada in beautiful Jefferson County. Joe, you're on 710 KNUS. What do you think? Joe? Hello, Joe. Joe, did you put us on hold, which is totally understandable because I put you on hold for a long time. In fact, according to this special thing here, well, it hasn't been that long, but it's been a little bit of time. Joe, are you there? Going once. Going twice. Joe, you call back.
Yeah, I'm here.
Joe, you're there. I'm sorry. I thought for a minute you'd been taken hostage.
I had done the face thing on my mute button.
Oh okay. I got it.
So I disagree with the previous caller. I do understand the rep that, you know, felt that it was a mistake because of some of the wording and remember, it was just a resolution. It isn't some kind of law binding.
That's true.
Item that
does that matter much?
There's nothing. Well, here, let me give you the opposite end. Some legislatures, like in Washington, are passing a law that it's against the law to mention that the election was stolen. I mean, there's the exact opposite resolution. It holds nothing. They're not going to prosecute somebody for voicing their opinion. But what they're doing is they're chilling free speech. And the idea behind the resolution, and I understand it, and I'm all for it, is to say –
You're talking about the amendments to the resolution. You're talking about the Republican amendments.
We applaud those people that want to step forward and say their mind, even if it's wrong, even if they were incorrect. Now – whether or not it's going to affect the legislation and the Coloradoans, it is going to say, look, we need to stand up to kangaroo courts like the January 6th commission and say, no, we need our voice represented on that, not just some Nancy Pelosi chosen
I agree with you on that. But let me ask you, Joe, in that regard, do you distinguish between – and I understand trying to say things like, listen, January 6th wasn't just about what happened to those people in the Capitol, the people that broke all the laws and did what they did to try to stop the election from being certified. There was like a jillion people outside who did nothing wrong except came there to. Do you see a difference between saying we want to cheer them on or acknowledge what they did, but then take a look at the Tina Peters situation and say, well, she's not a private person. She's a public person.
Okay.
She's charged with doing certain things. And this is what I heard Representative Soper say. It is completely inappropriate to pass any kind of resolution or put your stamp of approval on trying to derail an investigation before it comes to its natural conclusion.
I disagree because of this reason. Jenna Griswold is a partisan hack who is using her office and using prosecutors, pressuring prosecutors.
She can't pressure a single prosecutor, buddy. I'm telling you, she has no authority.
There's political pressure being addressed here. This woman.
But Dan's a Republican. Dan Rubenstein, the DA, is a Republican.
Just a moment.
Go ahead.
Well, there's lots of Republicans that have reversed their course.
But what political – who's bringing political pressure on a Republican DA in Mesa County, which is heavily Republican? What political pressure?
Well, I would say Dominion is.
Why the hell would he care what Dominion thinks? What does he care?
Well, that's a good question. That is a very good question.
I know, but it's a question that requires an answer, not just repeating. I mean, Joe, if you're saying, hey, I think he's on the take.
I don't know why Dominion would pressure him.
I don't think that they are. That's my point, is that here's a guy that took an oath to check.
That's a question that should be answered.
Yeah, but wait a minute.
I think it's a question.
Who's asking that question? Who thinks that DA Dan Rubenstein is being influenced
by
Dominion?
Not enough people are asking that question.
But what you could make up anything. I think he's being influenced by Darth Vader. I think he's being influenced by Joe Biden.
This.
I think there's a hidden promise
of
an appointment to the bench.
Okay.
If he were to, I mean,
just
we can make up all sorts of stuff.
But just a second. Tina Peters was exercising her free right and her observations.
No, she wasn't, buddy.
She was not
accused of exercising her free speech. And Joe, God, I wish I could have this conversation with you more. Maybe tomorrow. Oh, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. John Caldera is. Listen, she's not being investigated for exercising her free speech right. She's being investigated for breaking the law on some other things regarding the performance of her duties. Listen, thanks everybody that was on. Representative Soper, Dustin Zvonik, fantastic. I'll be back with you on Monday. George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.